You're listening to the Wesley Seminary Podcast. Your host today is Dr. Aaron Perry, Associate Professor of Pastoral Theology and Leadership.
Not every family looks the same. The picture of what is the quote-unquote typical family is different. It's hard to think about a typical family now because there are so many different ways that families are put together. Now, in some ways, this is very challenging to the church, and we might have people who are really enthusiastic about investing in the family, about strengthening existing families, and yes, those ministries are important. But today's guests are going to argue that there's a wonderful opportunity to help families who have gone through division also to thrive. How we can help parents who are co-parenting so that their children can thrive in the midst of this very difficult circumstances. Today's guests share not only their expertise and their wisdom, but also their story so that you can know that there is such redemptive possibility for parents who are involved in co-parenting, so that the children in the midst of divided families can still thrive by the grace of God. What an opportunity to share the redemptive work of God in Christ in these such important years and situations. Today's guests are Jay and Tammy Daughtry. Jay and Tammy both have earned master's degrees in marriage and family therapy from Tribeca Nazarene University. Jay has over 20 years of pastoral ministry, and Tammy has over 20 years in counseling and therapy experience as well. And together, they have a unique family as well, as they met after divorce and after the loss of one of their spouses. In today's episode, you're going to hear their story, their wisdom, some practical application, and they're going to point us to some resources as well. You will hear how the gospel, the good news of the reign of Jesus Christ has made a difference in their lives and then through them as well. Whether you find yourself being a parent after divorce or after division, whether you are shepherding a church where you are helping people through these situations as well, whether you were counted on to be a wise voice in the midst of very challenging circumstances for people as they raise their children, today's episode is for you. Stay tuned for a word from our sponsor and then enjoy the podcast.
We are Wesley and you belong here.
I'm Gloria Zikiwe. And I am Wesley.
My name is Chris, and guess what? I am Wesley.
I'm Ryan Wagers, and I am Wesley.
My name is Julius White, and I am Wesley.
My name is Jen Peterson, and I am Wesley.
We recognize this beautiful diversity that the Lord has called together that is Wesley.
My name is Corey Merritt, and I am Wesley.
I am Wayne Brown, and I am Wesley.
I am Colleen Durr, and I belong here. You belong here, too, because we are Wesley.
Well, welcome to the Wesley Seminary Podcast, Jay and Tammy. We're glad that you're with us.
Thank you. Glad to be here today.
Our connection started a few weeks ago when we were talking about some of the material that you all have produced, sometimes together, sometimes individually, and some of your skills and the ways that can get worked into the seminary here. And I knew just from that conversation that you would be great guests for us. So we're glad that you made the time. I'd like to start this out just by asking you to share a little bit about your story. Tell us some of your experience and how you became interested in the subject of co-parenting.
I just sort of fell in love with her and then fell into co-parenting because it was a ministry that she began back in 2003. So we've been married since 2009. But one of the interesting facts was, as you mentioned, the first half of my life was as a full-time pastor. As most folks know in the church, being a secondary pastor means you wear a lot of hats sometimes. Most of that was around worship and discipleship. The second half of my life, we met. She was getting her master's in marriage and family therapy. I kind of became her study buddy to help her out, figure out how to get through comps. It was in that process that really God awakened in me an understanding. My view of things is he's made us in his image. And that image includes not only the spiritual part of us, and certainly the physical part of us, because we can't get away from, we're living in these bodies. But then there's this emotional, relational part of us, our psychology, the psyche that we exist in as well. And I started to realize that a lot of the counseling that I did as a pastor, there always seemed to be a little bit of something missing. And it was a struggle for me. And part of that struggle was recognizing as I was helping her learn some things, I was learning things, and God was saying, this is the piece that's missing in your puzzle, because we're more than just spiritual and physical beings. I've made you a well-rounded individual, and you have these psychological needs. And just as a doctor who knows and understands what God has already put into his creation, well, they can facilitate physical healing. I started to understand, I need to understand how God has wired us emotionally, relationally, psychologically. And when I do, I will have a unique understanding on how to facilitate emotional and relational healing. And that's not outside the church, because I know, you know, as a pastor, there was the very secular side and the scientific side, because psychology is scientific. That was the beginning of my journey of walking into this space and then into this very specific and wonderful niche of helping moms and dads who have gone through a division. Maybe they were married, maybe they're never married. Whatever the case was, now mom and dad are apart. They have kids and they're trying to figure out how do we raise them well. And one of the epiphanies for me that drew me into this space was being in a divorce recovery class in my master's program. And in the middle of that class, as we were talking about it, realizing I come from a divorce family. And someone might say, well, that's wonderful. You didn't really have to think about that because everything went so smoothly. But then there was the other side of that, which was something that, you know, she really understood and that I started to understand is, you know, left me and my two brothers with huge holes in our hearts that at 57 years old, I still feel. It's great to be in a good, well-adjusted remarriage step family. That's wonderful. But it's not so good when there's this total disconnection from one of the two people who made you.
I remember that day that he said, wow, I realized today I grew up in a divorced family and really in a step family. And we had an amazing conversation that we continue to walk through together as a couple. And on the flip side, I would say I grew up in a divided family since I was one. And so it was, we lived in two, you know, mom and dad were in two cities. There was a lot of stress around their co-parenting, which nobody used that word back then. But 21 years ago, I found myself at the end of my first marriage with a precious little girl. And we had been in counseling for about 5 years of our marriage, trying to make it a healthy marriage. And when we came to the fork in the road where we were going to become co-parents, I was just honestly a hurting single mom who loved the Lord, trying to figure out how do we do this journey. And Angelia's father was very interested in being in her life and very committed to being a dad. And so I started looking for resources and tools about co-parenting from not just a Christian lens, but from any lens. And unfortunately, 20 years ago, I really couldn't find anything. There were a couple resources out, but just the titles of those resources were very negative and the connotation was very toxic. And so eventually I started producing events, which is my first career. I was an event producer in the Christian music industry. And I started producing events for divorced parents that eventually led me to realize I want to go back to grad school and understand some, you know, get some more tools for my tool belt. So that's when I went to Trevecca as a single mom, wanting to work with high conflict co-parents and help them journey through. And the Lord brought Jay and I together, which he didn't mention this earlier, but he's a widower who was happily married for 21 years, three beautiful children. And unfortunately, they lost Diane in a car accident. And so he had come from a very, very happy home with these children. And when we merged families, our kids at the time were from age 8 up to 21. And we've been married now almost 13 years. And they're all young adults. A few of them are married. And we have 4 grandchildren with number 5 mm-hmm. coming. So our blended family continues to grow and change. And I would say as far as co-parenting, I started that organization back in 2003 just to initially help the church wrestle with this topic of how to support parents during what is their greatest tragedy, the demise of their family, but to also help them have the mindset or point them towards the vision of being a parent alongside their co-parent. Because at the end of the day, I really believe children who come from a complex family still have every hope to become an amazing young adult and to launch well and to even go on and get married and have their own wonderful families. I think it's possible. What we've created with some of our resources are some tools and some roadmap guidelines on how to do that and to protect children in the journey. So that's a bit of a long answer, but I grew up in complexity. I have been a co-parent for 21 of my daughter's 22 years. And then I've been a blended family mom for almost 13. And I'm still a great friend to my own stepmom who helped raise me in my big complex family. So have lots of personal experience and now professional experience in helping families.
I know we're going to hear about these resources a little bit later, but just want to mention them. Jay and Tammy are the authors of One Heart, Two Homes, Co-Parenting Kids of Divorce to a Positive Future, and also Co-Parenting Works, authored by Tammy, subtitled Helping Your Children Thrive After Divorce. Jay, you've already given us a note that this might not be divorce explicitly. Maybe it's division of some sort. And Tammy, you shared a little bit about Jay's own background and the loss that he and his family experienced with the death of his wife, his first wife. And so this is something that you all have worked through, not just theoretically, but personally and experientially as well. Jay, I want to ask you a question, because I think your experience in the church and your attention to language really resonated with me. Suppose somebody says to you, you know what, I'm about strengthening existing families, and so co-parenting just isn't as important to me, right? Maybe they kind of see it in a negative way. How would you respond to a person who says it like that? I'm about strengthening existing families, not so much about co-parenting. How would you respond?
I can understand where they're coming from, certainly. Having been a pastor for 20 plus years, the resources always seem to be less than what we need, whether it's human resources or financial resources or whatever it is. And so there's always the struggle of, okay, what can we do? From that perspective, I can understand that. But at the same time, I would challenge folks who are thinking that way to expand their thinking and understand, well, really, the family is a design of God. It's representative, really, of the Trinity in a lot of ways, in my mind. And it is the foundation for strong communities. We know that. It's also the foundation for strong churches, and strong churches are the foundation for strong communities. So if we're going to neglect half or more of the families in our community, that is really going to be a problem for our church to be relevant, I think. That's the big struggle, because as of 2015, step families became the number one family type in North America. That's something that a lot of churches haven't dealt with. They haven't thought that through. If they are of a mindset that says, well, we're going to strengthen existing families. Yes. And we have to recognize that the community we say we want to reach, more than half of them are families that have experienced some kind of disruption, whether it is divorce, that they grew up in a divorce household, whether they're going through a divorce right now or have gone through one and have remarried and become a step family. Whether they might be, you know, and this is part of the challenge for us, because when they did that research, that didn't include all of the cohabiting. We have all these young folks who went through divorced families. So now they come into their young adulthood, and the last thing they want to do is even get married. The idea of marriage to them is scary, and rightfully so. And so now we have this whole segment of society of never marrieds, who came in with the idea that, well, marriage didn't work out so well for mom and dad, and certainly not for us, because it was a real drag to go through all of that. We'll just solve the problem by not getting married. If two people really love each other, why worry about all that getting married stuff and this legal contract and the church and all that? You know, so they just sort of just say, hey, let's just get married. Well, the problem is then they consummate that marriage, they end up with children, and then they divorce for whatever reason. And they don't want to call a divorce. Well, they divide. But problem is, now it's even more complicated, because that father doesn't necessarily have a legal connection to his children in the way that he would if they had gotten married. So anyway, what they end up doing, unfortunately, and this is a big part of what we're trying to do, is break the cycle of divorce. And the way you do that is not ignoring it. See, that's where some churches are at, too. And I don't want to be harsh about this, but understanding, you know, as Tammy could tell you, when she became divorced, it was like having the letter D stamped on your forehead, living in the middle of the Bible Belt, right? And it became this thing where no one wanted to talk about it. You know, some would talk about it in the sense of it's almost like something you would catch. You know, it's like our ministry leaders are a little bit uncomfortable because there's all these married men and you're single. Don't you think maybe you'd like to be dating somebody? You know, I mean, crazy stuff like that, because they're uncomfortable. And I can understand that. We do get uncomfortable when, on the one hand, we're saying this is this beautiful, wonderful thing called marriage that God has ordained. It's sacred. It's important. And we have to uphold it in the middle of a culture that's completely dismantling. And so we get afraid and we get protected sometimes. And we have to break free of that sense that we're protecting it at the expense of the calling that we have that says, go to this world, reach out, find people, love them, care for them, give them everything you've got, and show them that the Lord who woos you with kindness has no condemnation for you, and they certainly don't for these folks. And the reality is, you know, just on a very practical level, the church will no longer be relevant, and to a great extent is not right now. And a big part of that is that they have stopped reaching out to family as it exists today. Complex family is the norm now. It's not the exception. And we have to deal with that reality. We have to bridge that gap. And we have to be intentionally designing our churches, their programs, and recalibrating within ourselves to understand we must reach out, because if we decide that all we can do is deal with first-time intact families, then we are taking half of our mission field, more than half of our mission field, and saying, you're no longer important to us. You're no longer relevant to the church. We really can't help you. Mm-hmm. And so where will they go? Well, they will go wherever they can find that help, or they will struggle themselves, even if it's the second time around, and find themselves at an ugly crossroads once again. And then once again, the family will take another hit and our culture will take another hit. Mm-hmm. So I think it's really important, before we get stuck in a mindset, to challenge ourselves to look within, to bring it before the board and the other influencers in your church and say, what is our mission? And I think we'll find that the mission we've been given includes not just first-time intact families that we understand and are more comfortable with dealing with, but also these complex families that are all around us. And many of them, whether we want to recognize it or not, are actually in our congregations. Many of them too afraid to speak to the complexity that they live in because, well, it's just uncomfortable. And so then they sit in a congregation feeling alone, because there's no place for them to go. There's no small group that meets their needs. There's no Sunday school class or special time for them to come and learn how to do well the things that they need to do to maintain healthy, strong, connected families, despite the fact that one or the other have possibly gone through a divorce or been raised in divorced families themselves. And they have parents outside of the home that have impact inside their own home, because they have co-parents on either side of the equation. So those are very complicated dynamics. And no, they're not easy, but they are reality, and we can understand them. And when we do, we've created a whole new way of reaching our world. We have to speak to the families outside of the box that we may have created for ourselves.
I just want to point something out, because it's kind of one of those things that might be missed, but it's so obvious. One thing that as Christians we believe in is redemption. There being a broken situation and miraculously bringing good from it. God taking the individual brokenness of lives and stories and experiences, and then bringing brand new skills and graces and abilities and passions. And here I'm talking to two people who have, in your very own stories, elements of these tragedies and brokenness and negative experience that you wouldn't want to wish onto anybody, of course, but right. Out of it has come a passion that you both have for ministry. And there are people in our churches whose experiences and potentially their education, or maybe an interest in education or further training they would like, can all coalesce and come together. And just like you two have found, they would find, oh my goodness, this is what God is doing in ministry through me. This is something that I can give into the world and develop in our church, both in discipleship and maybe evangelism, and praise God for it, right? There are people who don't just need to receive the ministry, but as you're saying, Jay, this is an increasingly common situation. And there are people who God will bring this ministry through in a way that shows how he's redeeming these situations. To that end, I love the positivity of the titles that you've given, right? Co-parenting kids of divorce to a positive future, co-parenting works, right? Tammy, you describe yourself as a co-parenting strategist. So let me bring this question to you then. What are some of the very most important building blocks for people who want to co-parent well?
Sure. Well, first I'd like to say to any lead pastor who's listening and you're on board and you want to make some important impact, some of the small things you can do that make a big difference for those single parents and step parents in your congregation is on holidays like Mother's Day and Father's Day, simply acknowledging as you wish your congregants, you know, a happy Mother's Day, specifically saying, you know, to the single moms, to the stepmoms, to the grandmoms, to the women who are like mothers, you know, simply working that in from the platform on an intentional basis can make such a difference for people to know that they're seen, they're valuable, and that somebody knows they're there. And for the dads on Father's Day to say something about, you know, happy Father's Day today to the fathers, the single fathers, the stepfathers, the uncles that are like fathers, the grandfathers, you know, a simple inclusion like that from the very front makes a huge difference to those that might be listening in the seats or who maybe haven't made it in the doors, but they're watching online. I think those are some little things that can make a huge difference before you even start planning programs or hands and feet on the ground. Those are little things that a lead pastor can do that make a huge impact. Because I know anytime I sat in the audience and heard that, I knew that someone did that on purpose and that I mattered. Even if I'd never met that head pastor, you know, directly, I knew that it mattered to those leaders and to the elders and those that drive and navigate the ship. So that's a little tidbit for the leaders. Now, quickly to the moms and dads who are living in that scenario of sharing children. One of the big blind spots that people don't realize is the way they do what I call a handoff, how they handle the handoff is really critical for kids. And I do a whole workshop on this, but I'll sum it up in two or three quick points. And that is what the parents do as they prepare the child to leave them, to see the other parent, how they speak about the upcoming exchange, what they say about the parent, about, you know, the upcoming exchange, that is really important. Some parents, it's a blind spot, but some parents tend to use those opportunities as, oh, honey, I'm going to miss you so much while you're at the other house. And, you know, I hope you have everything you need. And if not, I'll come bring it to you. You know, they'll say things to their child as they're getting them ready that almost ignite some anxiety or some sadness in them leaving and going to the other place. And the tone of voice and the body language that a parent uses in this preparing for the handoff is really important. And so when I'm talking to parents directly, I always try to help them remember three things: your facial expression, your body language, and your tone of voice as you prepare your child to go. If you can really work at that to give them your emotional permission and affirmation to leave and enjoy their parenting time with the other household, that will take away 3/4 of the stress and pain for the child. Because when kids leave and they're going to the other house, certainly, you know, even if they're only there a few days a month, it could be that exchange time could be a little triggering for mom and dad when they see each other. And so kids feel that, you know, if mom and dad aren't speaking to each other, if they're really rude and say ugly things at the handoff, you know, kids will absorb that emotion and those feelings. And so the parent who's preparing the child to go, really doing a good job at that. And for example, I used to always, when I was saying goodbye to my daughter as she was getting ready to go, whether it was for a week or for a couple of weeks in the summer. Now, you know, I'll say personally, I was never happy to wave goodbye to her. That wasn't my favorite moment. You know, it's not that I was glad she was going, but I knew that it was up to me to give her the emotional cue that it was okay to go and that I valued the time she would be at her dad's. That released her from being worried herself about the exchange or even worrying about me when she was gone. And so I would say things like, you know, Angelia, your dad's coming. He's going to be here in a few minutes and you're going to have such a great time when you go see your grandmother this weekend. Or if I knew they were going on a big trip out of town, I'd talk about where they were going and just say, you know, honey, I know you're going to have a great time on that cruise with your dad. And, you know, if you forgot something, I know your dad and stepmom will take care of it. And I would really give intentional words to the fact that I knew she would be cared for and that it was a good thing for her to be with them. And so in the reverse, when kids come back from a time at the other house, how mom and dad handle that is important too, in that some parents use that as an opportunity to, you know, kind of be a, put the child in a spy position. Oh, what's going on? We'll pick on moms for a minute. You know, a mom might say, well, what'd you do at your dad's? Well, who's his new girlfriend? You know, what is she about? And, oh, I don't think you should listen to her. She's not your mom. Or, you know, they'll take those times when kids come home from a parenting experience, they'll use it as a time of interrogation and creates a lot of stress for children. So I really, if there's one thing that parents want to pay attention to and really try to put some intentional effort around, it's how they handle the handoff. Because most kids will go through that experience anywhere from 500 to 600 times, sometimes even 1,000 exchanges in the journey before they launch into college or whatever comes after high school. So it's part of the intentional work and co-parenting to do a good job of that and to be consistent with it, because anything a child experiences 500 to 1,000 times is going to really create an imprint in their heart about whether everything was okay or everything was not okay. So that's one. And then the second one I'll say real quick is there are a lot of great co-parent apps that exist today. So we try to point parents to utilizing some of those communication supports, because probably the hardest thing for parents to do, other than waving goodbye to their kids and smiling and, you know, being positive about that so their children are okay, the second thing that's really hard to do is to communicate with that other parent. You know, people don't end relationships, get divorced, or divide their families because everything's working. And usually what wasn't working prior to the divorce really increases the stress and the tension around those areas. And communicating about money, about schedules, about medical decisions, about school, about extracurricular, so many details that still exist when you're co-parenting. The one thing I suggest is to protect the handoff. Never, ever make that the time and space to have a co-parent business meeting. And instead, utilize a co-parent app and also find a time, maybe it's once a month, maybe it's once every other month, that you set a time that you talk at a prearranged schedule, maybe for an hour, about all things co-parent business. But never ever doing that at the handoff, because by default, a lot of parents will try to use the handoff as the time to talk about, hey, you owe me money. Didn't you get my email? You owe me $75 for ... Or why haven't you answered my text about, you know, exchanging next Friday for Thursday? Or they'll use that time and the child might be standing right there hearing it. They might be sitting in the car watching and waiting, or they might be told to stay inside until mom and dad have that conversation outside. But any of those spaces are going to create a lot of anxiety for children. So we want to compartmentalize the time and the space and when they communicate about co-parent business. So it's never at the handoff, but instead trying to set up a co-parent meeting, which can be done by phone, it can be done by Zoom, and even in person. I've actually found that a lot of co-parents, they behave differently and a little more mature when they're in person. You know, whatever fits there, finding some time to continue to communicate about the business of parenting, but never ever around the kids and never using the child as the messenger.
I think that is just so insightful. One is just like the amount of times that this is going to happen, what an important piece of the co-parenting life to attend to and do it well. And I think that's so wise. Don't do your business of co-parenting business whenever there's this exchange. How do you make it positive? How do you honor the other parent? How do you set the child up to have a great experience? Jay and Tammy, I can tell we're just getting started. What I'd like to do is invite you to come back on the podcast another time, and you can talk a little bit more. But maybe before we wrap this conversation up, what's one of your resources that you would recommend to parents to become better at co-parenting?
Well, certainly a good place to start is the Co-Parenting Works book, How to Help Your Children Thrive After Divorce. Understanding that, you know, I'm going to be able to toot the horn for my wife because she wouldn't do this for herself, but she's an amazing author. She has this way of expressing in a very practical way the experiences she had. So it's not a book full of ideas and theories. although there's plenty of research that backs up what she's speaking about, it's real how-tos, nuts and bolts of how do I do the next right thing for myself, for my children, and so forth. So it's a great place to start. And then, of course, the One Heart, Two Homes curriculum that we developed out of that really is that book blown out, expanded with 31 other guests, real-life co-parents, children and adults of divorce, and other professionals coming alongside of us and giving voice to all the challenges that are there and offering very, again, very real, practical, applicable solutions to how to do this well. What's the next right step? And I think that is really the hallmark of what we do and what these resources are. And I think that's the cry of the heart, because any of us who've been in highly stressful situations, the one thing that we really want to figure out is, what do I do now? And so I think both of those resources are such a powerful way to set someone down, help bring the chaos down a couple of notches, and offer some real help and say, okay, here's where we're at. Let's do this first and then this. And so one step at a time, move them towards a healthier function for themselves, for their kids, and for whatever complex family they're experiencing.
I'll tell you, the greatest compliment I ever get is when a leader or a therapist says to me, hey, I am not a co-parent and I didn't grow up in a complicated family, but your book has helped me understand my clients in a much different way. And that honestly is the greatest compliment. And so for leaders or for therapists that are listening, people who are going to be working with family, even if you don't need that book, I think it might help you really to get inside the stories and the mindset and the emotional experience of what parents go through when they are co-parenting. And the second quick footnote about our videos, One Heart, Two Home, for any church that's listening that has access to Right Now Media, all of those videos are on Right Now Media. So if you're a church or an organization that utilizes Right Now Media, just go in there and search out. You can either search out Tammy and Jay Daughtry or One Heart, Two Homes. And all 10 of those videos are there and some links for handouts and whatnot. So, and then if you're not and you're looking for that, certainly come to our website. You'll see the offerings we have at our website. But if you do use Right Now Media, I wanted to make sure that you knew you have access to it immediately.
Friends, if you're interested in more information, you can find more information at coparentinginternational.com. or at facebook.com/coparentinginternational, and also at Instagram at One Heart, Two Homes. One, the number one, Heart, Two Homes, and the number two as well. One Heart, Two Homes. Jay, Tammy, look forward to our next conversation, but thanks so much for taking the time to share some of your story and share some initial strategies with us around this very important topic of co-parenting.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, listeners, for tuning in. You make conversations like this possible. If you've found this episode to have introduced topics and resources for fruitful ministry, which we exist to do here at the podcast, then share it around. Like and subscribe, let others know about the podcast, and let them know about this episode in particular. Thanks so much, Connor, for being such a great teammate on the podcast. Appreciate all the work you put into it. Thanks so much, everybody. Trust you all to have a great day.
Find us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter under the name Wesley Seminary.